Today on the LA Food Podcast, I'm your host, Lucas Servodio, but you can think of me as your personal concierge, because I've got your weekend all planned out. LA3C Food and Music Festival is coming to downtown LA's historic core this weekend, and while the music lineup is pretty lit, as the kids say, it's nothing compared to the food lineup. We're joined today by Joey Rubin, who leads food curation for the festival, to hear about how him and his team put together one of the coolest food festival experiences this city has ever seen. From a Oaxacan sushi pop-up featuring the folks over at Simone in Silver Lake, to a bonkers collab between Poltergeist's Diego Argotti and Pearl River Deli's Johnny Lee that may or may not feature an orange chicken burrito, this is truly the kind of food experience that could only happen in LA. So listen to the conversation with Joey, go buy the $20 tickets, $20, that's it, and I'll see you there, dear listener. But first, I'm going to give you a quick rundown of three news stories that caught my eye this week. There's an LA restaurant that's been named to Eater's list of best new restaurants in America 2023, a fascinating look at Erewhon's questionable past, and some fried chicken drama cracking on between Time Out LA and La Coupe. That's all coming up next, so without further ado, let's chow down. Dear listener, I can't wait for you to listen to the conversation that we have today with Joey Rubin, who curates the food at the LA3C Music and Food Festival, which is happening this weekend in downtown Los Angeles. I'm not kidding when I say that I think this is maybe the best list of food vendors I have ever seen at a food festival or at a music festival that also has food. The reason I love it so much is because I feel like when you go to one of these festivals, the vendors are always kind of just reiterations of what you see on the best of lists from like the likes of Eater and the Infatuation and the LA Times. It's always the same places, and it's no disrespect. Those places are great, and they're there for a reason, right? But I like to go to events where I get to discover new things. You know, one of the best parts of any music festival is getting there a little bit early, going to the stages that are a little more out of the way, and discovering a new artist. And I feel like food festivals should have the same ethos. They should be introducing you to new things. They should be allowing you to go to places that you're not already going all of the time. And I believe that Joey and his team have done an incredible job of putting together a list that is exciting and that you're not going to want to miss. So do me a favor, go to la3c.com/marketplace to check out the entire lineup. There's places that you've probably never heard of, and that's a great thing, right? Like there's a place called Barrio, B-A-R-Y-O. I've never heard of that. There's Leonardo's Pasta Bar. I've never heard of that. There's a place called Soosh, S-O-O-S-H, exclamation point, Soosh. I believe that's sushi, but still, I'd never heard of it before having a conversation with Joey. This is my kind of food festival where you have places like that that you can actually discover for the first time. And yes, there's some places we know and love, like Simone Seafood, like Valerie Confections, friend of the pod. There's Wanderlust Creamery, there's Speak Cheesy, the great pizza down in Long Beach. So it's a perfect mix of old and new. So definitely go check it out. Before we get to our conversation with Joey, I wanted to quickly talk about a couple of news stories that I came across this week that really caught my attention and that I wanted to bring to yours, dear listener. First and foremost, Eater, the national version of Eater, not Eater Los Angeles, published a list of the best new restaurants 2023. It's one of those like big signature feature pieces they publish each year. And this list is a relatively small list. I think they included like 12 places or something like that. And in that list of 12, they included one place that's in Los Angeles, or I should say, the greater Los Angeles area, because the restaurant they selected is a restaurant in Pasadena. Now, before I tell you which one it is, let me quickly give you a rundown of what they say is a criteria for being on this list. They say what a best new restaurant is, is a restaurant that announces itself as part of the quote-unquote national dining conversation, meaning they do more than just offer a great meal. They're reflecting something bigger about the way that we eat in this country. That's what they write, right? Something about the way that they're cooking is saying something bigger about what's happening in America, culinarily speaking, in the broadest sense. So the place that they included from Pasadena is Bar Chaloux. Bar Chaloux. It's a French-esque bar that also serves food. And yeah, you've probably seen it on lists because it has been getting a fair bit of hype. But I'm not going to lie, this one surprised me a little bit. Not to say that Bar Chaloux doesn't deserve to be called one of America's best new restaurants. It just surprised me because, you know, when something is bigger nationally than it is locally, have you ever had that experience? You know, maybe like America might be talking about Ron DeSantis more than actual Floridians are, right? Because they've had Ron DeSantis to death. You know, they don't really care anymore about Ron DeSantis. He's not a novelty there anymore. But the rest of the country, you know, for a hot minute there, was really interested in what this guy was doing. This may be like a Ron DeSantis moment where Bar Chaloux maybe is more significant nationally than it is locally. Because I'll be honest, I just haven't heard a lot of buzz around this restaurant here on the streets, so to speak. You know, if I were to put forth a restaurant in Los Angeles that I think could belong in the conversation of best new restaurants 2023, I mean, you already know what I'm going to say, dear listener, but I would have to say Poltergeist, right? Poltergeist is the kind of restaurant that I think is saying something bigger about what it means to start an exciting new restaurant in America in 2023. There's also, you know, a case to be made for a place like Perilla in Victor Heights, which is serving those like cool, like Korean-esque lunches. And I think there's a case to be made for a place like that. But Bar Chaloux, that was a surprising one for me. You know what? I'm not going to knock it. I'm not going to knock it. I'm going to go and I'm going to try, and I will report back as to whether it has successfully changed my mind. But for right now, I'm going to throw a little bit of a question mark there because it was a surprising one for me. I would be interested to know, though, from you, who do you think maybe deserves to be included in a list of the best new restaurants in America 2023 in Los Angeles? Send us a message. I would love to know. The second story that caught my attention was in The Cut. The Cut is like long form news article places where you go and you spend way too long reading a story about a very like in-depth subject, you know? And they happen to spend a significant amount of journalistic real estate discussing one of my favorite topics, Erewhon. Yes, that's right. The grocery store we all love to hate on. Basically, this piece, which is a really good piece, and I highly recommend it. I'm going to put it in the show notes. It's written by Kerry Howley, and it explores basically the history of Erewhon and how it got to be sort of like the cultish phenomenon that it is today. And there's a great line in the piece, which I think captures it perfectly, and it says, Erewhon exists within and has always occupied a space between commerce and cult. And I think that is just brilliant. It's a brilliant way to capture what Erewhon is doing and sort of like this like deranged devotion that so many people in Los Angeles have to this grocery store. But when you read the piece, you kind of realize like there's a bit of a dark underbelly to this whole Erewhon and like health food thing that's going on. The story is of two individuals, a wife and a husband in Boston of all places, who were originally from Japan and in the 1950s moved to the United States to advance the principles of their guru in Japan, a man by the name of Osawa, who was all about this macrobiotic diet. And now you see that word everywhere, macrobiotic, right? But at the time, it was this very new thing. And basically, the idea was kind of like, your health can entirely be fixed based on what you're eating. And there were a lot of things in this diet that were prescient. You know, they were all about fermented foods, low sugars, vegetables, very specific types of vegetables, mind you. They were super against things like potatoes. But on the flip side, they were also down with smoking. So I guess you win some, you lose some. But basically, the story tracks the progression of Erewhon from these beginnings in Boston to where it is today. And what's really interesting is they explore sort of like the ethos of the founders and draw some interesting parallels to where we are today. So Erewhon, the name, right? At first, I always thought it was just nowhere spelled backwards. And it's not exactly that. It's actually an anagram of nowhere. And it's named after a satirical novel by a dude named Samuel Butler, basically this like utopian society called Erewhon. Now, if you look it up on Wikipedia, Wikipedia says that the satirical novel is about a place where people are like in charge of their own health. But that's actually not really what it is. It's a utopian society where people get incarcerated when they're sick. If someone has like measles or if someone has like, you know, bronchitis, they get a criminal record against them. The journalist, the writer, asked the question, and I'm quoting here, could it be that America's buzziest grocery store, its wellness mecca, was named in honor of the idea of incarcerating sick people? And why that's really interesting to me is that there is sort of like an ethos that we see, a sort of dangerous ethos that really kind of just like shames people for not eating as healthy as they potentially could or should. What's interesting is the founders of Erewhon blamed their diets and their vices for the ways that their loved ones died. So like one of the co-founders died of cervical cancer, and the husband was basically like, well, she liked eating fried bread and blamed that for like over-indexing her yang and causing cervical cancer. I don't know about you, but that just sits wrong with me, that we kind of like blame people for diseases that they contract. Sure, there are things that we can do with our diet and with other things to increase our health and to prevent disease. But this whole like cult of just like blaming people or like, you know, judging people who aren't shopping at Erewhon or aren't shopping at Whole Foods or aren't trying to cook the healthiest possible way for themselves and their families, it just ignores this reality that it's not possible for everybody, right? It's just not socioeconomically possible for everybody. And not only that, but it's not the only way to live a healthy life. Read the piece. It's a much better storytelling exercise than I have done right here. It's very, very interesting. I highly recommend it. The final thing I want to talk about, and then we'll get into our conversation with Joey Rubin, is this. Time Out LA put out a very good list of the best fried chicken in Los Angeles this week. They followed up with another list of the best fried chicken sandwiches in Los Angeles this week. And I honestly think they did a killer job. The reporter, Patricia Kelly Yeo, did an awesome job eating at a bunch of different fried chicken places and compiling a pretty diverse list. Now, the sort of like drama here is that one place was left off of the list that a lot of people might think, that place I think could easily make a fried chicken list in Los Angeles, and that is Le Coop. Le Coop is a place on Melrose Hill that's, you know, I believe it was a pop-up at first and now serves like fried chicken or hot chicken or one of those like really buzzy, like, you know, chicken products that everybody loves. Basically, the reporter said that they left Le Coop off of the list because the owner of Le Coop is a Trump supporter. The reporter said this on their stories for everybody to see. Now, when I first saw this, I was like, is that the right thing to do? Is that, you know, look, I'll be honest. Part of me was happy when I saw it because I was like, yeah, you know what? I've not supported businesses before based on their political beliefs. You know, I haven't been to Chick-fil-A in probably like 15 years as a matter of taste, but I definitely have not gone following, you know, how publicly they have come out against LGBTQ plus rights. I've also, you know, not shopped at Hobby Lobby or places like that, right? But when it comes to actually reporting or curating a list of places, I ask myself, would I leave a place off based off of their political beliefs? And their only political belief that we know of is that they support Donald Trump. I don't know the answer to that. You know, part of me is like, that feels like against the spirit of food. Like, food at its essence is supposed to bring people together. And I think of an episode of Taste the Nation with Padma Lakshmi, where she goes to the El Paso border. And, you know, it's El Paso. It's a place that has a very diverse community. There's a lot of people that literally like cross the border each day to work in El Paso and who are, you know, facing immigration struggles and whatnot. And she profiles a business where like the owner is like a pro-Trump anti-immigration guy, yet is employing a bunch of these people. And you can kind of like see the debate happening within him about like what the right thing to do is. And in that particular case, like, food is a really interesting and important sort of like convener of people in a way that like allows for conversation, allows for like an exchange of opinions and thoughts, and creates a space for coming together. Now, call me naive, call me idealistic. I know that that's not really like a thing that happens in America or in politics very often, like coming together, listening to the other side. But if it happens at all, I feel like it happens over food. So to use a food list to basically shame or call out a Trump supporter felt to me a little off. Now, I will say, if that Trump supporter was shown to like be doing heinous things as well, like, you know, had they engaged in hate crimes, had they, or were they engaging in bad business practices? Like, were they, you know, short shrifting their employees? Were they doing things like, you know, harassing their employees or just being abusive or verbally abusive to their employees? You know, I think those are all super legitimate reasons to leave someone off of a list or leave someone off of, or to not give someone a good review. Because you know what? I don't care how good your product is. If you're engaging in those negative business practices, I don't want to go and support your business where people are actively being hurt, right? But if all you did was vote for Trump, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that. I would love to hear your thoughts. And, you know, if you do have any thoughts, please hit me in the DMs at the LA Countdown on Instagram or on TikTok, or just leave us a message here on Spotify or on Apple or wherever you listen to podcasts. Well, that'll do for Newsy Bits today, I think. We covered a lot. We'll put all the links in the show notes. And without further ado, we're going to go to our next segment, which is our conversation. Joining us today on the LA Food Podcast, he's the owner of Parade Agency. He's part of the core team over at Bite Club, and he's also the curator of the food and beverage program at the LA 3C Festival, which is coming to downtown Los Angeles this weekend. It's Joey Rubin. Joey, how you doing today?
Doing good, boss. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Joey, where are you calling us from today?
Double parked in front of the Ace Hotel, where we're going to light up this theater with three nights of shows, a huge ticket sale, and just so many people on this block. I'm looking at the entrance right now, and I'm looking at what this is about to be in 72 hours. It's going to be incredible. I'm so excited.
Are you in like that liminal state before a big event or big festival where like all the days just kind of bleed into one?
I'm in a comfortable state of where, you know, you're in that pre-show advance and sort of rubber's hitting the road. And I've like learned over the years how to take better care of myself and do it like running and stretching and hydrating instead of like stressing and, you know, like coffee and just going too hard in the wrong direction. Like, yeah, really trying to do It's like way better to do prehab than rehab on these things, but it is a bit of an endurance. I mean, from now until this time next week, it's everybody's going to put on like 20, 30,000 steps a day, if not more. You know, you're in a dense urban environment. You're moving between streets. You're breathing city air. So it's fun to have had experience on this site before and come back to it with like a different approach. So it's actually quite fun, to be totally honest. It's like really fun
Good.
right now.
What kind of footwear are you rocking for this kind of experience?
I'm wearing some Huaraches right now, which are comfortable. Conversion from what some like AZG trail running shoes from earlier, and then I'll probably also have a pair of Protos, which is a great new brand that has a really comfortable sole and a Vibram sole and an insole that's like really great for service and walking and kind of the work that we're doing. So it's a good question. It's a great question actually. It's a footwear strategy.
No, hell yeah.
Also,
I'll be looking out.
it's fly included. It has to be fly too, of course. Come on.
Totally. You can't be seen like in Hokas, you know. You're not like a 40-year-old dad.
I am a dad. I'm almost 40, but you won't catch me dead in a Hoka.
Fair enough, fair enough. So LA3C Festival, is this the first year it's happening or has it happened before?
Second year of the LA3C Festival. This is an exciting big pivot for the fest to turn into this kind of really exciting, like creative use of downtown spaces, where last year it was on a large field and it was that big fenced in festival kind of state park experience. It had huge headliners, and really the festival wanted to connect with more of like culture and creativity in LA, and just felt like it sat on this historic core, which is just a beautiful area that has these amazing rooms and theaters and these opulent showcase spaces where we can put stage on put talent on stage and really bring the oxygen that these rooms were meant for. You know, these are incredible venues. So Erykah Badu, Herbie Hancock, Robert Glasper, Terrace Martin, Mark Rebollet, like these are amazing artists to fill these spaces. I've been in these places as someone that's lived in Los Angeles for a decade. I've seen shows here. I'm so excited for these shows.
Yeah.
And then what we've also done is taken the outdoor areas all around these spaces and transformed them into these really cool marketplaces. So we've got a project out called The Bazaar right behind me next to the Ace Hotel that has a big pop-up with In Sheep's Clothing. And the Black Market Flea is on that lot. And so throughout the day, you've got DJs, you've got a record fair, 1010 Wine and Events from Englewood is going to be the bar that's serving everybody. There's food trucks in there. It's fun. And then our marketplace for the culinary experience is a block over at 854 South Main Street, where we've built out a football size kitchen pavilion plus staging, where we'll have 30 different pop-up concepts throughout the 3 days rotating
Damn.
on that lot, while Dan the Automator, Questlove, Moody Man, you've got an amazing DJ lineup on there, just it's a theme park, as it's been joked about.
It sounds
It's fun.
unlike any other festival I've ever been to. Is there any other comp out there for this, or is it really kind of a one of a unique thing we have here in Los Angeles?
LA is a unique city where you can actually pull something like this off culturally, and I think that's like a lot of the motivation. There's actually that there is a huge palette you can pull from to create this locally. But there are some inspos on it where I think the organizers would say early inspirations around Montreux Jazz Fest, Big Ears, which I believe is in Knoxville. These are Could be wrong about that. I don't remember. But these are kind of like some of the models, South by Southwest model of sort of access and like how we're running the actual attendance of shows and admission to shows is on a first come, first serve basis for the general admission ticket. And then you can add on to that to guarantee entry. And then there's even a higher purchase ticket item for a VIP ticket. So if you're like me, like a longtime Herbie Hancock fan, the idea of seeing him in an intimate venue for $75 and then going to a marketplace and then going to another show, I mean, it's amazing, but you're going to want to get there early to make sure
But
you get in.
that's great value. I mean, these days to get a ticket to a show, $75 is actually really good value for a show of the caliber of Herbie Hancock. You're not getting it much less if you're going to see him at the Bowl.
Yeah, the first on sale for this was $75 for the all weekend pass. The value was
Wow.
incredible. So in theory, for $25 a day, you could see Kamasi Washington, Erykah Badu, Herbie Hancock, Flying Lotus, like all of these shows. Just
Wow.
an unbelievable value, and it was kind of a gift from the organizers to be able to see that. And so this is a longer term investment for them, wanting to put some good value on this first downtown style experience.
So food at these kinds of festivals has, gone to a whole other level. I mean, I remember when it was just like getting a shitty burger, a shitty hot dog at Coachella. But now we're seeing festivals bringing in like more and more exciting types of food and more thoughtful curation. But just from scoping out the sort of like marketing of LA3C, this seems to be taking it to even a higher level where it seems like the food is being placed almost on the same billing level as the music. Like on the website, it says food lineup before it says music lineup. So talk to us about that ethos and sort of like how you even go about curating something like this.
This is a music and food festival. So this is a very, very big part of the entire show to have such a highly curated food experience and to be able to produce something like this as a food festival. I mean, I'll say, you mentioned like the Coachella stuff, like they've done a remarkable job. Like we have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to food festivals in LA. So it kind of addresses like all of these places having immaculate curation, and the coordination is very complicated, and the regulation around doing this work is not simple. And so the curation seems like the job, but really the job is all this lift. And people have done an amazing job given the prohibitive barriers to entry to doing these kind of experiences, working with like city coordination and safety and just the cost of doing business in food alone. So all that said, I think we do have amazing food festivals and experience here in town. So then that answers your second question, how do you be different there? I think the strategy here was to curate from different geographies. So you could look at, popularity or personal profile, or you could look at, like different populations or food concepts or pop-ups. There's a lot of different lenses and channels and approaches you could take to curating something like this. And my team and I, we all kind of think about a new, using one sort of filter was geography. How do you, people say LA is like this great food city. I think it's like a city of food cities, and you have an opportunity to curate geographically within a city. So we were trying to, like, every time we thought of something, we'd think of a compliment quite far away, So we're having conversations off the Venice Boardwalk and La Puente. We're talking about Sherman Oaks and Long Beach. We're going mid-city, outer city, inner city, all city. If you know anything about graffiti, this is an all-city program. Like, we're trying to cover the city. That is the approach, and the rationale around it is that if you move around LA geography, you will find this sort of like endemic story, this like amazing flavor and ideas without having to program from that side of the equation. So the search was on for geographic diversity. That's where we started. And so that's kind of where it came from. It's evolved. People have come on. And I'm proud to say that we really do have great coverage from, here to like the edges of Los Angeles. Like we've got a lot of good coverage, but we also only have so many spots, so you can't hit every part. Like you see people in the comments of Eater being like, you need to bring the list to say, you know, this and that. It's like, yo, you really got like 40 spots. What do you want to do? You're doing your
Yeah.
best.
No, I mean, I was really impressed. Just looking through the list, I was really impressed to see, because let's be honest. Yes, food curation has come a long way at these music festivals, but I do think you see a lot of the same types of places, and maybe you'll tell me that's unfair. But what I really liked about the list of places that is showing up at LA3C, we've got Speak Cheesy from Long Beach. We got B Taqueria from South LA. Like that geographic diversity is very well represented. And yeah, maybe it's not, maybe yes. Did you get a spot from Covina? Maybe not. But who's to say that that won't be there next year? You know what I mean? It's sort of like, I love
We're
the
close.
ethos.
La Puente is pretty close. La Puente is pretty close to Covina.
Yeah.
closer than Long Beach. Yeah, I mean that was the mission. Like, go for geographic diversity, and then of course you have the relationships and the on ground experience. And this, I think, the second part that you're looking for is like who's fortified in their flavor, in their story, in their concept, in their, you know, personability, like character. Like, there's just a lot of other qualifying things that we have experienced doing this kind of production. It's working with people we want to work with for a reason. So a lot of these are emergent voices in food in LA. This isn't like the world's most established, and some people have great creds. I mean, you've got James Beard nominees, but you also have people that are using now shared kitchens that we helped acquire so they could take their driveway pop-up and put it on stage. And that's like the Ekbalam story, the you know, family cooking Yucatan cuisine in Pico Downey area. And you're like, yeah, this is incredible. Like, this is what you want to showcase, because not everybody can drive to Pico Downey, you know, on a Saturday and catch one of their seatings to try this, like, you know, regional Mexican specialties that are executed perfectly. And we should bring that to a crowd of 1,500 people in a food fair.
Yeah, totally.
That's kind of the idea. So
I love that.
geographical diversity, real people with real food and real stories, and then put it all together. And that's kind of what we're working on over at the marketplace.
That's amazing. And I also understand you have some sort of like special festival only collabs and experiences happening as well. Is that right?
There's a couple in there. There's a couple match made in there. I'm really excited about Ford's Gin and what they're doing with like Lonely Oyster and Thunderbird and this album launch slash listening for this album they created. That's the collab. I mean, it's Dan the Automator, the producer, brings Handsome Boy Modeling School to life. This is like old hip hop, you know, lore and fame and greatness that's like come back to life through a martini brand and a gin brand. It's like, okay, that's like incredible to me. And then that's, you know, that is something we're celebrating here. It's the type of spirit of collaboration we love. But then the stuff that we've made for this is Estrano is, you know, Diego from Poltergeist, and Estrano is longtime friends with Johnny from Pearl River Deli. And they've got a crazy. I was actually laughing right before we got on the phone, looking at the menu prices, and every item's $20, and that's it. And I just know that that's like their sense of humor to be like, I don't know, everything's $20, you know. But they're doing some really cool dishes that'll just be there for the Saturday. One thing I love that we took a corner of this kitchen pavilion we're building. We just made it all Caribbean, so we've got like Ruby and Bridgetown Roti and Aziz Kitchen all doing Caribbean flavors, which I think it's like hard to collect in Los Angeles unless you're at like more of a Caribbean fair and you're in South LA and you're going to something like dedicated. It's like rare to get exposure on it inside of the typical food fest in a way that's more than just one place. You know, like Bridgetown might be there, Roti might be there, you know, Aussie might be there, but like, I don't know. I don't think we've seen them all together in a span, which is
No.
cool.
And because of that, you
There's some
also only
fun.
really get to like experience those flavors every so often. You know what I mean? It's like you got to be going somewhere, depending on where you live at least. So it's cool to ha have that all in
Sure.
one place.
Yeah, that driving distance thing, you know, how that was kind of it. So if you live downtown, would we book a bunch of stuff from downtown? Or if your festival's downtown, would you book a bunch of stuff from downtown? Maybe not. Like,
Yeah.
I don't know. There's epic restaurants like around the corner everywhere here. So
Yeah.
we're doing staff meals out of Uncle Polly's. Like, I can't wait to go to Sammy Mansour's restaurant tonight. Like, those are all here. You should go there all the time. Also, if you're doing a food festival, we're going to bring people in.
Well, yeah, because those people are going to get foot traffic anyways by virtue of just being there, right? Yeah.
By virtue of just being there. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, the reason the way your ethos of curation is super interesting to me is because I've seen this with other food festivals and even music festivals where it seems like their list is basically just like the same lists that you see on their website. So let's say like this is an example, and it's not a shot at them because I'm a fan of theirs, but the Infatuations Food Festival, EatsCon, right? It's their curation is basically just like their list of like best restaurants in LA. So what ends up happening is you just get a lot of the same places that people are probably already driving to because they are on those lists. What I like is you guys are kind of breaking the mold and even going outside of those lists. Like, you know, a place like Estrano, well, probably because Diego is focused more on Poltergeist now and not on that. But regardless, I wasn't seeing it popping up on many lists when it was more of a regular thing. Same with Ekbal, same with like a lot of these other places. So I like the way that this is breaking the mold personally.
Thanks, man. I'm glad you notice. I'm glad you notice. It's a little bit of nuance, and it's cool that you pick it up. But I also just I love when people fan out on LA food, and like we get all nerdy about it, myself totally included. And it's like
Yeah.
this is a nuanced list, and like if you know, kind of thing right now. And hopefully we just like continue with this plan because I think it's fun.
Yeah, it's like the deep cut vinyl store of food festival experiences.
We're working with Form Festival doing the music booking, and you've got In Sheep's Clothing doing the record fair, and you got Black Market Fleet curating the on sale retail goods. Like, you have to show up with hi-fi food curation. Like, you can't do commercial poppy. I mean, our the music profile on this thing is so deep. Like, you have to
Yeah.
compliment off that.
You can't be serving salt and straw here, and I'll throw them under the bus. You don't have to.
You can't be serving salt and straw here. There's the bus. Yeah, you can't. It's
You
fine.
just can't.
We got
You
one.
just can't.
We got Wonderlust. I love the Wonderlust story. And you know, it's like the Wonderlust story is great, and it's not just that it's great ice cream, they have epic flavors. Like, they're a really dialed strategic team. So their business is really fortified, you know? And you could be catching the early wave of the next salt and straw when you put a Wonderlust on a festival. It's not about just the flavor alone. Like, that has to be there. It's a given. But it's also about what are these unique vendors doing, or these partners, these chefs, these creators, like, what are they doing? Like, what's the journey? What's the narrative? And do you see this going somewhere? And that, can you
Yeah.
stand behind that and stand behind that journey to help and make this investment in what it takes to put them on
Yeah.
stage? That's kind of, I think, not dissimilar from like how the music is looked at here. There's no one like filling air here, you know?
Yeah. No, so we've talked about the curation. We had Tanya Kohler, who curates the food at Outside Lands, on the podcast a few months ago, and she told us about sort of some of the difficulty of actually like the logistics of serving food at these spots and like curating the menus based on what is actually servable. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you work with the places that you invite to the festival to ensure that the food that they're serving is actually good?
Yeah, 100%. I have a killer team that I work with, and I bring them to everything that we do. So the first stop is with exec chef Kat Turner, the owner and chef at Highly Likely. And Kat and I have like been through like a bunch of different really amazing events over the last decade plus, and we collaborate really like tightly on menu. And then Menace and I, your friend, we work on the curation first. So kind of like we'll kind of talk narratively together about vendors, and then Menace and I like talk to everybody, and we bring them into the mix, and then it kind of goes to Kat, and we do this culinary exercise and work through people's menus and their equipment plan, their order guides, the service plan, and understand like how to open basically 32 restaurants at once. And we think through like How's that food prepared? What's the carry time of a fried good versus like how quick are these pickups? Who's doing scoop and serve? Is this vendor capable of executing something they think that they can do or they want to serve? If not, Kat acts as like a culinary director that works with a chef creative to ensure that you can kind of fulfill that good and that type. And then, yeah, I mean, it's, you're also in a live event zone, so things can change. And if it doesn't get hit perfectly, like that's going to happen to anybody. But the idea is that you go in and you set up as much as you can to, visualize the service and the dish and the flavor and then the format, the equipment planning, the service planning, and then helping them get stood up through their entire permitting stack of health department and the types of like, steps of service go into being on site. It's quite a bit. It's like it really is like planning, however many 20 plus 30 plus openings for these partners.
Yeah,
And yeah,
that's not.
we scale everybody down to like three dishes ish around their average. And we personally experienced everything with everyone, so we know everybody's food. Like we feel
Yeah.
confident that they can bring that flavor off site. And things are different when you travel to a field kitchen. So it's like it's a degree of like checks, balances, and confidence,
Yeah. How did the whole scaling down thing go with Diego? I know he loves to scale things down.
Diego and I have done some discreet stuff together already, and we talk often. He'll like be in the kitchen on speakerphone and we'll just talk about random stuff. So we have like a really good shorthand. Scaling out of his working environment is something that he's like more than capable of doing as a professional and as a just a beast. Like he can do it. And so it's nothing. I mean, I think if more of it was just laughing about making like laughing about coming up with stupid dishes. Like
Yeah.
that was it.
Yeah.
Him and Johnny are just planning it. Like Johnny's been in China, like traveling, like and then I just get the menu. That's it. That was that one, I was like, great,
That's
you guys are
crazy.
doing orange chicken burritos and awesome.
Oh my God, I'm stoked for that. What is this Oaxaca Mitsosaka thing I'm seeing everywhere?
That is the culmination of a great pun turned into an experience. We have a relationship with Autech, which is the company that makes the revolving sushi bars and the precision instruments for like the sushi bars, and they make robots that like make sushi, and they automate a bunch of sushi making processes. It's crazy. It's so cool. And we have access to that equipment. And so we'd had this pun that was, I think I dropped it one day on a phone call, on a bike club call, and everybody stopped me and was like, wait, what did you just say? Because I talk fast. And then I had it in my mind ever since then. So we brought it to life with Simone Seafood, this Autech revolving sushi bar, and a really premium sushi pop-up called Sush. And we put them all together. We're creating a menu for this for the food truck. Obviously, it's Simone's awesome truck that you guys know from, Silver Lake around LA. And they are going to produce this menu, and then we are going to change the format of that menu and bring it into a tasting menu, like a tasting menu of on the sushi bar for eight seats at a time. That's paired with like Suntory's new like vodka seltzer drink and or a De La Calle, and it's totally awesome. It's a game within a game. I don't know. It's a revolving sushi bar with like epic Mexican and Japanese chefs like collaborating on this little carve out area that we've designed. It's
Yeah,
pretty fun.
this is like the just the joy with which you talk about like even coming up with these kinds of things. I think it's palpable, and I think it's one more reason why everybody who loves food in LA should go check this out.
This is a good one. This is a good one. The marketplace tickets are on sale at $20. It's a hell of a deal. The VIP ticket with the festival includes an hour of hosted samples throughout this place at from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. each day. So on that note alone, you could come to the whole thing. You come each day and try every bite in the marketplace, or damn near, I should say. But yeah, it's a great one.
Let's talk a little bit about Bike Club real quick while we have you, Joey. For those of at home who have never heard about it, what is Bike Club?
Bike Club's the drop culture of food, and we do a weekly drop with these same types of super exciting culinary experiences. And so I'd be remiss to say that it weren't like a huge part of how we curated this show, it's and has been just like in, an amazing vehicle for this creativity to come to life and for a lot of these relationships to come out into a commercial format. Like it's an awesome platform for emerging talent and established talent to put together ideas that they might not otherwise stand up because of, tickets, like the fear of ticket sales or will anybody show up? And we basically at Bike Club put together and curate these events every week, once a week, that we push to our club membership and to the community. That is just this insatiable audience of LA foodies that just grab up all these crazy collabs we do, and they're everywhere and they're all types. So we've done products and hilarious like puns still. I mean, we did a we did a drop called Eau de Pho, where we created like the fragrance of Vietnamese soup, and we dropped it with Bonwi and Casey Felton as
Oh
an
my
actual
God.
perfume. We have done, for February 22nd, 2022, last year, in the year 2022, we did a 22 course taco omakase for $222 with 22 seats, 22 ounces of beer, two shots of mezcal, and played Tupac and Two Live Crew and Too Short all night long. It was, no, like a lot of it's fun, it's just coming up with really like ridiculous clever things. And then we've also brought amazing talent into LA that hasn't been here before. We'd done a pop-up at the restaurant Caboclo, a Brazilian spot. It's not here any longer, but downtown. This amazing two seatings of Alex, we did a pop-up for Alex Atala, that was like sold out. He's like amazing chef's table episode. You've probably seen him on, but actually just this, I mean, yeah, like one of those most fascinating men in the world types that cooks rare ingredients from the Amazon at his world's best restaurant. Brought him into LA. He's done some pretty amazing drops in the last couple of years. And one thing that happened is that we started getting calls from brands and trying to figure out how to work with that platform. And so the Bike Club is the experience that is very much what you see every week. And, thousands of members are signed up to receive all the drops and info on those. So yeah, after the last couple of years and, 100 or so drops, we started getting messages and friends from brands were reaching out, kind of how could we work together. And so on the back end of Bite the Club, which people see, we've started working on some creative and strategy projects with some of those bigger brands on how to bring food culture to these companies and help them tell their story through culinary experiences and collaborations in the food culture. So it's kind of like more of the business and the commercial side of it, and then from the fun and the culture side of it, it's the club, and then on the back, it's like, the seedlings of our sort of agency business that's going on.
How did you get into this crazy world? Were you in working in restaurants before this?
Yeah, I just got started super early on the East Coast in New York City and nightlife. I was working in bars and clubs, kind of on the music side, out of Avenue C. Sort of last of the Bohemian, super special places called New Blue. That was my nighttime DNA. And I learned from some amazing nightlife, like really great American nightlife legends, the industry and like nightlife. And I was brought up through there. And then through it, I kind of really fell in love with like the bar and restaurant side of things and got closer to that
Also, the whole time I was like working in restaurants, you know, to get by. I was like washing dishes and, you know, working on grills and at a sake bar and like through bar like at the barbecue in the back of Nublu, like once a week is like doing jobs. I was working in service during the time, and I didn't love that part as much. I get it. I mean, it is a part of the DNA of the story, but yeah, I was just like really looking at the business model of it all and thinking, I don't know how I could get closer to music and the music business. I don't know where it's gonna go, but I know people love being in these places and I love being in these bars, and I learned the bar. I got into the bar trade. That was where I focused, and then just did a lot of like events and worked on openings and projects in it, and then kind of ratchet up into working with spirits and trade marketing and working with a bunch of amazing spirits brands on their events and their programs. And I kind of like the drinking culture is just heavy, so it's like I started like orienting myself to more towards food. But really, like my big first food story started in 2004, and I was working with this amazing chef Dante Gonzalez on his project called Dante Fried Chicken. And we were doing that in downtown New York, and I was helping him out all the events. And then in 2009, we decided we wanted to come out to LA and open a food truck. So my first ink on food things in LA was back then, with the Dante Fried Chicken truck called Rider Fry. And so we came out here and we opened a fried chicken truck, and yeah, that was an amazing experience. And since then, since 2010, I've just been working on food projects and crazy things here in Los Angeles.
And that was like the heyday of food trucks back then, right?
Wasn't much else. I mean, it was, you know, it was Roy. You had the classic Lancheros, and then you had the new trucks, which were like Roy and which Kogi, and then like I remember like baby,
The grilled
yeah,
cheese
the grilled
truck.
cheese truck. There was like Baby's Bad Burgers. There was like a couple others, but they were just early. Like it was the first stage of branded food trucks as concepts. Yeah, but like that's
That's
also
awesome.
not totally. It's a little disingenuous. Everybody had branded food trucks. It was a service for like, you know, for like working and neighborhood distribution. Well before it was just. We all know, like, you know, it's kind of like Kogi truck that like did the brand and put it online and got social, and that was like a beacon for us out in New York. Like, yo, that's like great. Let's go do that, you know. Get some sun.
I always wanted to start an arancini truck. That's what I wanted to do back then.
Hell yeah. Let me tell you one thing about and I think Kim Prince, I think Johnny Zone, I think a lot, anyone will tell you it's like filling fryers on food trucks, you know, to put out like fried chicken and like fried anything as a food truck concept is the gnarliest one. If I ever did that again,
I bet. Oh my God.
I would open a sushi cold raw bar truck. Like all
Yeah.
pellet ice.
Simone, genius.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I want a pellet ice machine on the truck, not a deep fryer.
Real quick, just tell our listeners where they can find LA3C, where they can find Bike Club online.
Go to LA3C.com. There might be some tickets left on the fest, and you can check out all of the weekly drops that we do over at Bike Club on bite.club. Bite has two I's. We're social on both, and hope we can see you at the drops sometime out there and at the festival this weekend.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the LA Food Podcast. Thanks to our guest, Joey Rubin, for coming on and telling us all about LA3C. I really hope to see you there this weekend, dear listener. If you like what you heard today, please go to wherever you listen to podcasts, leave us a rating, a review, subscribe. We'll be back next week with another epic episode. And if you're looking for me in the meantime, please go to Instagram or TikTok, and you can find me at the LA Countdown. That's LACOUNTDOWN. You can also find me on Instagram at LA Food Pod. That's LAFOODPOD.